Welcome to Blockchain Versus, a podcast specifically intended to dive deep into the technology that we call blockchain and how it has the massive potential to disrupt a number of different industries and literally change the face of how we do business every single day. We're also going to be bringing on some of the most influential people in the blockchain and cryptocurrency space to talk about projects that they're working on and how this technology truly has the opportunity to disrupt the world as we know it. This is Blockchain Versus. Hey everybody, thank you again for joining us on another episode of Blockchain Versus, another special episode where we're covering the so-called reveal of Satoshi Nakamoto. Christina, you're joining me as always. How are you?
Doing amazing. I'm actually really excited for this. Whether it's true or not, I feel like we're doing like a little bit of like guerrilla journalism because I think that the crypto community needs to hear about this. So no joke, I'm super stoked to jump right in. And Jeremy, tell me everything that you've been researching about this website that's up. Satoshi might actually be coming into the limelight. What the heck is going on?
Yeah, really interesting. So in the last one, we covered part one, where we talked about the origins of Bitcoin and the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto, how Bitcoin, the name was created, all that. And now really the second and third part, it seems like this person combined them on that website that I had told everybody about, which if you want to check it out yourself, it's satoshinrh.com. So SatoshinRH.com.
I think it's like Satoshi R. What are the words that come out? Satoshi, and then the three letters after that?
RH.com.
SatoshiRH.com.
That is correct.
No, that's not right. It's SatoshiNRH.com.
Yes. Satoshi N is Satoshi Nakamoto, and then the RH is Renaissance Holdings. That's what it is. So there's a company called, at the bottom of the website, you'll see it says copyright 2019 Satoshi Nakamoto Renaissance Holdings, which is the organization this is all going through, which is kind of weird. This is an organization that then hired a PR firm that did these interviews with the so-called Satoshi, and then they're kind of putting it out in terms of, you know, taking notes and reconveying what they heard directly from the horse's mouth, if you will. So it's all a little interesting and weird, and that's why there's a high degree of skepticism around it right now.
So SatoshiNRH. .com is the website, and it's Satoshi Nakamoto Renaissance Holdings. I looked at the website and it is transparent. I mean, it sounds so genuine. He's like, this is who I am. This is how I know how. This is what I did back here. This is what messed up my childhood and why I had a passion for it. I really am this person. So, I mean, you guys can go check it out and read along with us. But the fact that this is happening is just a very big deal in my world.
You know, I'm glad to hear it. And I love, especially when we have a differing opinion, right? Which is, I think this is all BS. When I first read it, I really did want to believe it. I think we all, a little piece of us, wanted to believe that it was real. But I mean, the more I dive into it, the more I see people's comments and calling out like inconsistencies and the quality of the website and the hiring of the PR firm, like all this stuff, it's just making me realize more and more that my suspicion was correct, that this is just yet another stunt. One thing, Christina, you probably don't even know, which I didn't even know either, that CCN covered another website by Satoshi that came out, looks like in May of this year, which is basically this other website called, let me just double check on the name of it. Oh God, what was it called? Oh my gosh, I'm trying to find it right now. Anyway, there was this other website. As soon as I find the website, I'll let you know. But it ended up going down the same thing. There was this countdown to unveiling Satoshi, and then it ended up being like the world's first AI anchor. And it was just this whole hoax type of thing, a similar website. And it duped a lot of people because, once again, people were really excited. And then people started, you know, conspiring that, you know, it wasn't this guy. It was some other guy named Paul LaRue, and he's a cartel boss, and he's just this incredible guy. He's like the James Bond of our era, but just, you know, on the bad side. And then, you know, people like John McAfee and all these other folks on Twitter, even though we don't take into account a lot of what John McAfee says, obviously, says it's absolutely not him. You guys don't even know what you're talking about. But long story short, this is just an ongoing thing. So just to get additional clarity, in terms of what this person is saying, is helpful. Once again, don't know if it's true. Don't believe necessarily it's true, but I think, you know, deep down inside, I would say overall hopeful.
I would say that you and I, so I have it as like a matter of interest. Like I will always be piqued by the interest of anything that happens around Satoshi, because to me, it's like, Satoshi was underground. The fact that this worked without a central person in the middle of it was a very big deal. It was the proof of concept for me. So if a Satoshi comes in, that Satoshi is going to have to prove that they are Satoshi. Just a PR game plan and, you know, getting a bit of Twitter chatter is not going to do it for me. I'm going to need to see evidence. I also will say that a lot of you guys don't know this, but like Jeremy knows this industry like inside and out. He's like a Wikipedia of crypto stuff, and he has seen the history of like people trying to pawn off that they are Satoshi. One of our favorite, lightning round questions is like, is Craig Wright Satoshi? Because neither one of us believe that. And it's always fun to get people's takes on it. But like, I really do want to hear from you, Jeremy, about this evolution of Satoshi and the PR nightmares that are capable of coming out of here. If someone's using Satoshi and Hal's name as a PR play and it's negative, I'm going to be pissed. No joke. I'm going to be like, you do not invoke those names without knowing what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's just, there's no way to stop it. There's always going to be these stunts and scams. And, you know, you see this over and over again on Twitter and different websites where people, you know, just take the same, you know, handle and then they add like a little dot or use a capital I instead of an L as an example. And then they use that person's, you know, name to be able to say, hey, send me Bitcoin and I'll give you free Ethereum or whatever the case may be, which is why Vitalik Buterin says Vitalik Buterin, non-giver of ETH, because so many people tried to use a fake account to try to get people to send him ETH.
There's always going to be bad actors. That has nothing to do with the cryptocurrency industry. That is just the world as we know it, unfortunately.
100% agreed. Yeah. So let's dive a little bit into it. So just a little recap of the last one, which is we did part one, right? The main theme there is basically Nakamoto, in quotes, the person that had, you know, published this, basically says, become disillusioned with Bitcoin because it's being used for criminal activity and has been, in quotes, hijacked by greed. That was not the original intention when he released this. This was to empower the little person so they could have control of their financial future and fight back against the big guy in the banks. Right? So these sentiments basically mirror the assertions of Craig Wright, which a lot of people say as well, the other self-proclaimed Satoshi, right? So it's like, it's interesting. Are they using the same vernacular, the same language? So anyway, that's why he eventually disappeared, because it was going down the wrong path. Now we're going to get into really part two of this story. And he, like I said, he combined part two and part three and really starts off by talking about the 980,000 Bitcoins and his real identity, right? So we're going to go through this. There's a lot of information on PAX, so I highly suggest going to the website and just reading it yourself. I'm going to touch on some of the highlights, and Christina will probably ask a few questions. This is, once again, just to empower you with knowledge so you can make your own determination. But where it gets really interesting is talking about on the website, he addresses after his part one release that there was a tremendous amount of people that reached out and just said, thank you. So he's talking to the people in the audience that actually believe that this is potentially true. And he's also talking to the haters that reached out and said, you're full of crap, right? Which I'm sure there's plenty of people. Because I think, like I said in the last episode, I think most of the people, especially the people early on, don't even want to believe that anybody who comes out and says they're Satoshi really are. I think they'd rather it be left unsaid. Or maybe they know something we don't, which is they know the real one and they know he will never come out, maybe because he's passed away or because he's in jail, or there's a high degree of speculation on a number of different topics.
It's part of the fun. It's part of the mystery, and it's part of the crypto community for all of us to speculate on this stuff. I mean, like, we're little fish in a very big pond, right? But we're never going to come close to meeting Satoshi. We may have met Satoshi and we have no flipping clue that we met Satoshi, right? That's part of the fun of all of it.
You know, it really is, right? Because we'll never know the truth, in my opinion, even if somebody tells us the truth. Even if this is the truth, no one's going to believe it. So it is what it is. I just, to your point, I think
we are skeptical these days.
It's kind of like, oh, that's the other one I was going to tell you about, Christina, and we need to talk about it at some point. We'll do another episode about the Bitcoin time traveler, because that is just some fun stuff, right?
Like sci-fi stuff. Right. Bitcoin time traveler, yeah. Where they say that they came from 2045 or something like that, and they're back in time.
Yeah.
And they happen to be insanely accurate, which actually freaks me out. So I want to run some AI analytics on
that. Yeah. So we'll talk about that just because it's fun, once again. Not that we believe it, but because it's fun, and I think the listeners will really appreciate it. So let's get into this, right? So he starts off by reiterating the fact that in part one, he said that I'm huge into numbers, huge into numerology. So he starts off by saying, if you remember from BCCI, which is the bank that kind of went under, and there was a lot of, you know, Bank of Credit and Commerce International that he was inspired to create Bitcoin from. Going back, if you add up the
numbers. Because it ruined his life. Basically, BCCI like ruined his life. And he said, I don't ever want this to happen to the world ever again.
It didn't ruin his life. He heard the story. His dad talked about it a lot because his dad was in banking, and he just heard the story and realized and read a lot of different articles about this massive bank that had, you know, billions and billions of, you know, assets under management, and it really destroyed people's lives, and that just hit him to the core. But anyway, on a long story, the BCCI, if you add it up in numerology, equals 9. Right? So that's why he's saying in the 2008 Bitcoin white paper, he limited it to 9 pages. Then he goes on to say that Bitcoin and the BCCI equals 23. And then he talks about the significance of 23 and why he did certain things on November 18th, specifically 2008. Because if you add all those up into numerology, that equals 21. So, right? 18/11/2008, which is, you know, just the date. If you add those all up, equals 21. Which is why he created the limit of Bitcoin of a 21 million max supply. So diving into a little bit deeper as to, like, there were actual reasons, and it's all based on numerology as to why he put that 21 million max. He said a lot of people put out speculation around the Bitcoin supply limit on a number of different things, but none of them are right. And this is actually the correct thing.
All right. So numerology is one thing. And I believe that, I grew up in the Northwest, which meant that I knew a lot of people that thought that crystals had healing powers and all kinds of, if you sit in a copper cage, you will have enlightenment, right? I know lots of those folks, and you can look at anything and kind of almost reverse engineer it to meet your numerology or your astrology or whatever, Mercury's in retrograde. It's easy to do that. And it's easy to say, okay, after the fact, I always knew that was going to happen. Or after the fact, this is what I did originally. For him to go from numerology is the reason why I did this, and here's Bitcoin, this thing that has changed the planet, and all he wants to talk about on his website is numerology. I have a feeling you have a few more items as to why you think this guy is really legit Satoshi.
Right. And just to correct myself, sorry, the previous one, November 18, 2008, was actually the registration date of the domain name that he originally got, which was bcci.net, which was owned by his real name. Later on, he masked the identity of that. But anyway, that's that. And then he goes on to say, when he actually released the Bitcoin peer-to-peer electronic cash system white paper on October 31st of 2008, all of that adds up to the number 15. And the number 15 also is the same thing that adds up if you add up the numerology for Bank of Credit and Commerce numerology number. So either this person is really freaking smart.
Okay, but why is it meaningful to you? Why do you believe it? Like, why you are a very, you are one of the most woke, discerning, analytical human beings I've ever met in my life. You're welcome. But why do you look at this and go, this could be
real? So as I mentioned before, I don't know if this is real. I don't think it's real. I'm just, you know, asking my inner gut, do you think so? And it doesn't necessarily pass the sniff test, if you will. It's one of those things to where I really think that it's either 100% real and no one will ever believe it, or this person is just a really intelligent person, because this is really taking a lot of time to really back into these numbers. And if you do the numbers and you kind of do the research.
You would have to basically be a super Satoshi research nerd to spend this flipping amount of time and put it on a whiteboard and try and figure out the numerology. Like, the amount of detail that's on this website, like, if it's not real, holy crap, dude, get a life. Like, the amount of detail on this website as to why they had gone into this is very, very, very granular. And the kind of stuff that you... I'm sitting here raising my hand going, you could make it up if you're, you know, if you're that motivated to go make something up, you could make it up. But the amount of detail that they just kind of go blah on the website is a lot. I mean, they would have had to spend years researching this stuff.
Or if you think about criminals in general, criminals tend to be, and the people in jail that are not doing anything other than rotting in jail, unfortunately, some of the smartest people in the entire world, right?
So, yeah, they have some time on their hands. You're like, not wrong.
A really smart person could really have accomplished this. And that's why I'm saying it's not convincing enough to say that it's 100% unequivocally real. It's convincing because, like I said, just if I just wanted to take my time, I understand numerology and I wanted to go through and tie the date in which somebody had released the Bitcoin white paper, October 31st, 2008, and then look at the Bank of Credit and Commerce numerology, which also has the encrypted version of the name Bitcoin within it. And that also adds up to 15. Like, that is kind of crazy and coincidental, but I'm sure if you want to find enough coincidences, if you look hard enough, you can find them.
If you're looking hard enough, you will find answers in a piece of burnt toast, right? I mean, they like, oh, it's the Virgin Mary and burnt toast, right? If you're looking hard enough, you'll find it. But I know you, right? So I understand why you're going, I'm hesitant to say that this is real, because in your gut, right? Like, you don't want to be wrong, right? But I'm on the opposite side for once, and this is why we get along so well, is even when we disagree, it's fun. I'm on the opposite gut side going, this could be real. Like, this would be a lot of effort for someone to lie about. This is a lot of lies. And if you've ever told a lie, you have to remember that lie, and then you have to remember that lie, and you can't build a public persona based on that. Like, it's just not sustainable. The lies will come to light and you will fail and you'll look like an idiot. So it's a really bad plan, right? So I'm inclined to say this guy may actually be legit. And even if he only gets, you know, 15 seconds in the spotlight, to your point, that could be very lucrative. But to my point is, why go through all that effort? Because you're going to be exposed if you are lying.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And like I said, you know, I kind of fight on both sides, because if it wasn't so detailed and so well thought out, I would have a lot harder time. But because it's very well thought out, but there's a lot smarter people than me in this world, and they're calling out a lot of just rookie mistakes. They're talking about how it's just linguistically not the same writing style. Even people that had communications on the Bitcoin talk forums back in the day when they were actually talking to Satoshi, they're like, this is not the same person. It's not the same person writing it. And I think Satoshi had responded in the beginning of this part 2 and 3 saying like, yeah, no shit. Because like I said before, to mask as much as I could, not only throughout time did I manipulate my writing style on purpose, act like, well, first of all, my native tongue is actually not English, is what he says. But also he manipulated things over time to keep people guessing so they could never figure out who he truly was. And this is through the eyes and ears of a PR firm that he hired. So it's not really truly written by him. So interesting stuff there too.
So basically all the objections are bullshit anyway. So far, everything that's, I'm a big fan of poke holes in it and see if it lives or not.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's just I'm Darwinian like that. Right. Just stab it with a sharp stick and see if it can survive. I think that this is kind of an interesting time in our lives where we're seeing something equivalent happen here, where there's enough people who care about this industry that if you are a liar, we will eat you. We will not stand for anything less than perfection in this industry. So all the scam BS players, you guys are not welcome here anymore. So if this is another scam, we will find out and we're going to be pissed about it. And hell hath no retribution like a woman scorned, or whatever that phrase is. I will be personally upset if this is not accurate, but I also will actually take time out of my day to be like, haha, look at that dunce who thought that he could, you know, pretend to be Satoshi. Because no one should be out there saying that they're Satoshi unless you're Satoshi. I mean, that's like, I'm not going to, again, okay, in the last part, I was like Christ-like, blah, 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 blah. But Satoshi is like this mythical figure for an entire industry. I mean, it is a beacon of light, of hope, of the little guy against all of the fucked up things in this world. right? All the things that we think that we can't change, all the things that we think, oh, well, the global infrastructure and the banks are going to eat us and there's nothing we can do. Satoshi stood up to that and said, I will not let this happen because you can fix it with fucking computers. Code, math, science can fix this. You don't even need a human. You don't need banks anymore. And when I learned that a year and a half ago from Mr. Jeremy Bourne, my brain exploded. So anyone who's going to fuck with that image better be legit. That was a lot of curse words for our podcast. I'm sorry, but I feel that
legit.
I would
not mess with Christina on this. I think she's very serious. And yeah.
No,
it's good. It's passionate. But you know, on the other side of things, you know, you always like to give the counter argument. I'll give you one too. Based on everything you just said and all the passion you've accumulated over the last, you know, couple of years being in this industry and understanding how transformational this technology can be and what it can do for the little guy, what if it's somebody that, you know, created it and they're it's part of this, you know, the government, part of the CIA, part of something, which a lot of people have speculated as well.
Well, if it's really Satoshi, you said something to me last night off air that was really important. And you said, if it really is Satoshi, we have to look at the fact that if this really is Satoshi, then he has about, I don't know, like $100 billion and could flood the market in Bitcoin and ruin everyone's party. I was like, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Dude. So, I mean, the proof there, but Satoshi in my mind, and maybe I just, you know, hype it up too much. Satoshi, in my mind, would never do that because Satoshi actually wants Bitcoin to work in the world. And so, like, why would he, you know, it's very easy to prove that you're Satoshi. You would send one Bitcoin or 0.0000001 Bitcoin at this point. You would send something from that account. That's how you prove it, right? Everything else is speculation. But if you're going to put that kind of spotlight on yourself, you better be prepared for people like me to come after you.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that would, right? And that's why if you ever come out and you truly are the real Satoshi, you better be pretty damn convincing that you freaking lost it all, which this guy basically, and I'm going to get to in a second, did. Or you just never come out because everybody's going to be after you. Every hacker in the entire world is going to try to figure out how to get your 980,000 Bitcoin. Which is
like that's a target on your back, like nobody's business.
So getting down a little bit further, right? They're talking about the development phase, going into Satoshi mode. One thing that he says, which is like, it's like, why would you like go into all this if you're lying? But I mean, I guess, you know, like, you know, criminals and people that are trying to, you know, fool the public and get very creative. There's sci-fi writers that make up shit that is crazy that I can never think of. So I guess it's possible, but he said he basically went into something called Satoshi mode, right? When he would go into his original emails and all this stuff, and when everything was hacked, he basically saw some emails circulating from some imposters pretending to be him. And what people don't realize is that just by typing two spaces after a full stop doesn't make them me, he says, as there were reasons behind it, right?
I understand that concept, Satoshi mode or Satoshi mood or Satoshi whatever, like putting that hat on in startups when you're struggling, right? And everything else is going on. But at some point you put your technical hat on and the rest of the world disappears. So I completely understand that. And I understand why your tone might sound different when you're really in the zone versus when you're like trying to juggle everything else in the world.
Yeah. And at the end of the day too, I mean, he said his mother's tongue is not English, as I mentioned. And growing up, he had some bad experiences with society and people being very judgmental about the way you read, write, speak English and all that stuff. So with that in mind, like he was really conscious of the use of language and he'd spend hours in front of the mirror trying to perfect his accent and pronunciation. And he's tried to improve it time after time. So he says specifically, like when he began working on the e-currency project, as he called it before it was Bitcoin, he's very careful as almost all the people were from the West and he didn't want to come across as a guy who didn't speak English very well, right? So he used to ask for help from some English people. Some of them were good English literature teachers. He used to send different people 2 or 3 line paragraphs to correct so they couldn't understand exactly what he was working on. And then they would return the correct version, right? So he went to significant lengths to make sure that, you know, people knew he was legit and maybe thought that he was from America and that English was his native tongue. He said that there was a tremendous amount of setbacks, especially early on. He was going through serious financial problems himself. He'd come to the UK to visit his ex-partners in a business venture. But basically, you know, he was trying to make it work, but they didn't realize at the time, but he was completely broke financially and personally.
I have lived that life and I understand it very well. Right now, I just want to give him a hug. Like, I totally understand all of those motives. Right.
he had mentioned that, you know, everything that he had done in life in terms of being under his real name has failed. It's led to tragedy and really had a terrible life. And for the first time ever, being Satoshi Nakamoto and living under this pseudonym, if you will, everything just seemed to go right and people responded to him differently. There was positive momentum, positive energy around him. And it was just like he couldn't get out of it. And that's why
he
why he would go into this mode. So yeah, Christina already feels bad for you if you're hearing this. She wants to give you a hug. And if you have any Bitcoin, she'll take one.
I'm such a weird human. I know. Sorry, that's just my knee-jerk reaction.
So anyway, he changed priorities. He said he basically met somebody. You know, he wanted to settle down. It started going down the wrong path, and I'm fast forwarding a bit here because there's a lot to cover, but I want to get to a lot of this. And he settled down in Britain in 2010, decided to get married and have a peaceful life at home, and not really dive into the fanciful world of Bitcoin, which it was at that time. He talks about mining and how it was super easy to mine in the beginning. You could mine blocks with CPU and not even a GPU. And that is very different than obviously where we're at today. He talks about his first PC. He put some screenshots up here about the Fujitsu, you know, computer that he had used before. He talked about transferring files from that to his Acer laptop. And this is where it gets really interesting, not only because a lot of people on social media that I've seen comment and they're like, this is BS. These are all stock photos. This is not impressive. This is obviously not him, blah, 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 blah. He says he wakes up one day in 2010 and his Acer had a blank screen. He thought, what the hell is going on? The night before, he had just moved all of this wallet data over from his last laptop to his new one. So he's basically freaking out and he had a decision whether to like delete this file or not to figure it out. And long story short, he had to reach out to technical support and he had to send out his computer. He sent out his computer. He basically said, 48 hours later, I'm going to hear back from them. He rang them again in 48 hours and they informed him of good news. The hard drive was packed in and they had replaced the hard drive free of charge, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so they replaced his hard drive to where basically what he's saying is all 980,000 Bitcoin lived. He basically said that there is an HDD inside, and maybe you techie folks understand all this, I don't, to where he's storing his HDD data. And he said that he didn't think that anybody could access that. And he made a huge, huge mistake on doing that. And he had put some sort of cryptic post on Bitcoin Talk in October 2010, referring to this experience, which is basically it says, Sai, why delete a wallet instead of moving it aside and keeping the old copy just in case? You should never delete a wallet. Apparently, according to this, he's saying that is the moment in which he lost all 980,000 Bitcoin.
Oh my God. Jeremy, okay, so not only is that a huge reveal, but it also makes a light bulb go off of my head for Cointainers and all of that nonsense. We'll deal with that offline. Holy crap. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I guess at first glance, like, and I think a lot of people on social media agree, right? Which is for somebody who's really that smart, they would really just give somebody their computer with all 980,000
Bitcoin. I deal with smart people all the time and they all have their limitations. I deal with smart people all the time and they do stupid stuff like delete entire databases accidentally. I mean, that's why we have disaster recovery. Stupid stuff happens. Even smart people make mistakes. No,
it's true, but I mean, that's a massive mistake, right? And you know,
I know, and I'm sure he's kicking himself in his nether regions right now for that mistake, but it does make sense. And I also will say counter argument, is that's a very, it's, you know, that's like a very, compelling story to cover up the fact of why you wouldn't be able to just send one and prove that you're right. Satoshi.
Well, and this is what he says too. He says, looking back now, should I have done some basic HDD checks when the screen went blank? Yes.
Yeah, but he was also like solo messing around with his own code. I mean, it would have been like Steve and Woz in the garage going, oh, we accidentally deleted something. I mean, it wasn't Apple then. It wasn't Bitcoin. I mean, whatever. You know what I'm going
right,
with
right.
on this
So what
one.
I'm saying is he keeps going on. He says, you know, how can be, yeah, he actually typed that. How can be a very smart guy, founder of Bitcoin, make such a stupid, costly mistake. Should I have consulted with Hal? I didn't because I felt I had let Hal down for making such root level mistake. I didn't want to tell anyone or consult anyone. I felt humiliated.
Psychologically, that makes a lot of flipping sense to me. I wouldn't want to go tell my mentor that I just screwed the pooch either. Like, I mean, he literally stepped on his dick.
Yeah, and that's why I was wondering why you were limiting what you were saying, because now you've said the D word, you said the F word, the S word.
Well, I've also said a bunch of curse words in this episode. I am trying, but like, I get so passionate about this topic, and like, I can understand his story. I can put myself and empathize and feel what it was like in that garage going, oh God, oh my God, I can't believe I just did that. Do you tell Hal? I'm not telling Hal. Like, you know, like, I can understand.
So, I mean, think about it though. It makes a lot of sense. If this is all true, it makes sense. I mean, the story checks out in a number of different ways and it doesn't in others, but that's why he said he abruptly stopped communicating to Hal. And this is one of the main reasons he went into self-exile, right? So he basically said he left and didn't mine any more Bitcoins, which is like, you know, you created Bitcoin, you know they're going to be valuable. Like, you really didn't mine anymore. I call bullshit on that. Maybe it's a wallet we don't know about. He blamed himself for the last 8 or 9 years and learned that these moments are the mysteries of life. And this, patient needed the bitter pill. And that's what he's saying. He's like, maybe I deserved it because I just didn't know any better. And basically he's saying, like, people should realize that arrogance can lead you to make one mistake, no matter how smart you are, which is basically, Christina, what you're saying, which can change things forever. I've learned the hard way that humility is the best policy. So now it's like, how do you claw back, right? Talks about his disappearance. He honestly thought people like Hal, Gavin, and Mike Hearn were better than him. And he felt that his purpose was fulfilled in creating it. And they were more than adequate to pick it up and run with it and make this into something that was wonderful. Unfortunately, sitting on the sidelines, he realized that it was just going all down the wrong direction, all down the wrong path comparatively to what the intention was when he originally created this. So then he talks about his Hakuna Matata years, which I thought was pretty funny, towards the end of 2011, where, yeah, right? And he really just talks about, he just got back to basic life. He started, working, free of charge for some people. He started working, fixing PCs, helping infrastructure, attending board meetings, blah, 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 and just getting back into normal life because there's nothing he can do to change the past. He just has to move on and he has to have a good life with his wife.
Okay, I really want to give him a hug now. Like, God in heaven. Like, I understand this evolution so much.
Well, I mean, and to end it too, on this specific note, in his hiatus years, he said he had a lethal back injury and was bedridden for almost 10 months starting in 2015. He endured full painful back surgery in December 2015 that spent the next few months in recovery. He had a lot of time to think, and then this was the time that changed his outlook forever on a lot of things, and he realized how fragile life was and how unpredictable it is. And that's when he started figuring out, how can I come back? How can I announce this where people will not call bullshit on me? How can I create something new? Because Bitcoin is not what I intended in the very beginning. And he talks about something called a Neuracoin. And he had never released it yet, and he still hasn't. He talks about that for a little while and different ways to scale and do things to get back to where it was. And then he's talking about reinventing his life and all the things that he had to do to get back to where he really needed to be. Talking to his wife, he had to come clean and said, hey, I have something that I never told you. You know, he went to deep, dark places. He said he contemplated suicide and all these things, like the darkest of dark places. And he said, I had to tell my wife, there's something I have to tell you. And she's like, what? He's like, I'm Satoshi Nakamoto. She's like, what the hell is that? He said, go look it up. And so she went and looked it up on the internet. Or he said, go Google it or something. And she came back. She said, wait, so are you a billionaire? He's like, about that. Yeah, no, I'm not. My bad. I fucking lost all the coins I had.
Okay. So you know how I feel about mental health. And I mean, I'm a huge advocate for all of that stuff. So like, I just want to give him a hug even more right now.
Yeah. And he's saying his wife helped him through this. And, he basically asked her like, should I really come out and say who I am? He asked her, like, what if like people were to vilify Satoshi as he lost an email account with 980,000 bitcoins because all the people hacked all his email accounts?
Well, they could vilify Satoshi, but then me, Christina Brujan, Kay Bizzle, the Brienne of Tarth of crypto, would be there as like, I will be your side warrior. Like, if he really is Satoshi and anyone ever fucking fucks with him, like, Satoshi to me is on a pedestal. So it's a very big deal. And the part that you're talking about is like the heartbreak of what it means to create something from scratch and have no one understand it and doubt your existence in the world. And all of those things are very meaningful to me. So I just want to give this guy a hug even more.
Even
now.
If he's not Satoshi.
You know what? He went through his pain and he's putting his pain on blast. Yep. And that is a very hard and very brave and very courageous thing to do.
Yeah. You know, I think, like you said, what you would do for him, I think his wife did for him, which is he said that her reply with all that, you know, potential criticism is, would Picasso care to prove himself or would he prove himself through his work?
Exactly. And this is why I believe it. Because you know what? When you're Picasso, you don't need to go around going, gee, I hope everyone believes that I'm Picasso. I don't know. Because you're already Picasso, man. You're already Satoshi. Like, you changed the world. You did it. Good job. I'm giving you
a
hug.
There you go. You got the air hug, right? And then that's what he said. He said it led him to conclude that if Satoshi was to be true to himself, then he must do so by saving and improving Bitcoin and not care what people think.
Which is the best lesson in life, man.
So now we come to the grand finale, the reveal. Satoshi Nakamoto goes through this whole process, loses his Bitcoin, and now he's back. And he really wants to fix things and prove to people through his actions that he's Satoshi, not by you reading this or listening to me telling you what somebody wrote about him. He basically comes out and says, I'm going to fulfill my promises. He basically says for the first time he is from Pakistan. He resides in the UK. He has never resided in the US. That's brand new. He said he graduated from Al-Khair, K-H-A-I-R. Sorry if I'm botching that. University in Pakistan. He took online courses from Yale in financial management, from Duke in behavioral finance, and from the University of California, Irvine, in project management, which is in our backyard, Christina, which is pretty interesting.
Hey, that's my people.
He gives a special dedication to Steve Jobs, which is kind of cool, especially if all this is true. He said, I'm dedicating my comeback to Steve Jobs, a legend of our times who also thought differently and changed people's lives. His name is synonymous with inspiration. So that's kind of cool. And then he ends it with the grand finale, once again, his real life identity. He shows the BCCI.net domain name, the registrant with Bilal Khalid, and shows the email address, shows the date, and he goes through talking about the godfather of digital cash, talking about James Cann, talks about Hal Finney, and how all this things played out into creating a secure future. And now with his full legal name out, James Bilal Khalid Khan, because he legally changed his name to that now. And if you look up on LinkedIn, I found a James C. There's no picture on it, but if you look at it and you look at the education, all the education is perfectly in line with Yale, UC Irvine, as well as the other one that I had mentioned before. So
guess who I will be connecting with this afternoon. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Just for shits and giggles, I tried to connect with him just because I thought it'd be fun. But anyway, he said, I will forever be known as Satoshi Nakamoto. It shows a picture of him with glasses on and a blazer that might be corduroy, by the way, with his signature. And then it says, coming soon, information on Tabula Rasa, my clean slate vision for Bitcoin.
Tabula Rasa, Hakuna Matata.
So that's it. That's reveal parts 1, 2, and 3, diving as deep into it as we had time for. And
I hope it's real, man. I hope it's real. I hope I get to give this guy a hug and say thank you.
So yeah, we'd love to hear more about what you guys think, right? You can hit us up on, any of the social channels, Jeremy Bourne and Christina Brujan. I know on Twitter, Girl Genius XV for Christina and Jeremy _ Bourne, B-O-R-N. Check us out on Twitter, follow us, go to blockchainversus.com, leave us a comment. Please go to the Apple Store, Spotify, Google Play, whatever you listen to podcasts on, leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear feedback. If you think this is fun, think this is valuable and entertaining at the very least, which I hope to God that you do, then we'll keep doing it. We'll keep having great guests on, and then also diving into things like this that we think are important to the space that people should know about.
For real, y'all. We will answer every message. We love hearing from you guys, and please help us shape this show into what is meaningful to you guys. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for letting me kind of pepper you with questions. And I feel very inspired right now. Like, I feel very like, oh, like I hope it's real. I really do. I'm like, I feel all warm and fuzzy at the moment.
I love it. Well, in the next one of these where we dive into something, maybe we'll do something fun and do the Bitcoin time traveler. And there's a few other things that we'll do. And like I said, we'll just wait for some of you guys' feedback in terms of things that you want to hear us cover. In the meantime, we have some really exciting guests coming on eventually, including Mr. Brock Pierce and some other very interesting people. We're about to release our interview with Mr. Steven Narayoff and Miko Matsumura. I mean, there's some really heavy hitters that we just had interviews with, and they're awesome. They've shed some light on some really cool stuff in the industry and really just drop a few knowledge bombs that I think are going to blow your mind.
This has been a production of Blockchain Intelligence LLC. This podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. The thoughts and opinions of Blockchain Versus and their guests are their own and should not be construed as professional advice of any kind. Before making any investment decisions, you should always do your own research and seek help from a professional. If you would like to get in touch with the Blockchain Versus podcast, please go to www.blockchainversus.com or email us at info@blockchainversus.com.